The third series, Rigorous Forbidden Greeting, I should say up front, this is going to be a lot more tentative than the previous 2 weeks. I'm pretty confident, as far as I'm willing to go, that I know something about Gemara and even more possibly about Rashi. Rambam is a mystery to me, and I'm just trying to lay out some of the issues and take one example through with you, and we'll see where it goes. Here are some fundamental issues in terms of what it means to read Rambam. So one core issue is the extent to which the Rambam's citation of Sukkim, or his rationales, are intended as profound scholarly rationales or as good popular explanations. There are lots of places where the Rambam seems to diverge in his citations of Sukkim from what should be the case if you learn the Gemara. And the issue is he doing that because he has some profound underlying reason for doing that, or is he doing it because he, in the Mishnah Torah, he presents the connection between Tarshi B'Stav and the Halakha in a way which is most likely to be popularly accepted? Okay, that's a fundamental question. The second question is the relationship between the Rambam and our Gemara. Well, the Rambam and Gemara, we'll frame it that way. So here there are any number of famous places, 70 I think is a good round number, where the Rambam seems to explicitly contradict the outcome of our Gemara as we have it. And you have a variety of theories to explain this. One theory is that the Rambam has alternate sources and he feels entitled to choose alternate sources over the Gemara. The Rambam gives equal authority to sources like the Tosefta of Midrash Halakha, at least on occasion. And then there are complications of both theories, which rest on one of two things. So Professor Derek Solblum years ago wrote a piece in which he argued that the Rambam reserved the right to reject some of the anonymous sections of the Gemara in light of what he thought was chat in the primary sources. This is what he modified by David Sykes in the master thesis. That's one understanding is that the Rambam doesn't feel compelled to accept all the answers of the Gemara. He thinks that they're forced, and he thinks that the Gemara acknowledges they were forced, right? So the best, one of the ways of understanding Gemara often is what the Gemara does is it presents the best possible explanation for each position, but that doesn't necessarily mean they agree with it. I think this is the best you can do. Mm-hmm. So there are modifications, depending on who you think the anonymous sections are written by, then you can modify the thesis. So that's fundamentally the thesis. Then you have counter-thesis, and the famous is Rabbi Benedict, who wrote a book called A Rambam Lulus the Aminat Talmud. The Rambam gives no divergence from the Talmud whatsoever. So this tries to argue that, in fact, you can always reconcile the Gemara Talmud. And I have not gone through the book in depth. I informed you this quite clearly, it's not always convincing. And you can make up your own mind about that. Those are fundamental questions. I'm not addressing the question here of how systematic Rambam's categorization are, which is a much more involved issue, which many contemporary the great debates in the Yeshiva world and things like that, the debate among Soloveitchik that there is extremes. But I'm not addressing that. I just want to talk about the Rambam's relationship to precedent and set up those two issues. We don't know what his relationship to precedent is with regard to Midrash Halakha. We don't know what his relationship to precedent is with regard to the outcomes of Sukkot. I'm not going to try and resolve it. Okay, let's take a look at what we have. If we look at read to the Rambam one, so we get a sense of what the Rambam is doing. And here's the Rambam's presentation of the Holocaust of Balyura Balyulase. Just so you know, we'll get to this later, that all the lettered things are things that the Rambam takes explicitly from Sugyot that we have done. The asterisk things are things that come from MRA statements in the Gemara, which I took out when we did them, or didn't get to, but everything that is labeled is the Rambam is taking explicitly from the Gemara, and you'll see there's nothing added in the places where he's not. And here I think that it is a good methodological point that in most areas the Rambam is not being a formally creative figure. Most of what he's doing is he's just taking all the information and doing what a codifier does, which is you take all the information in the code and you systematize it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't put in cases on his own. Right? He doesn't reorganize things into topics. Sometimes he does. Like, I think Hilchot Stucca is a tremendously creative endeavor. I don't think there was a Hilchot Stucca, as far as I can tell, before the Rambam created it. And so he's doing an amazing thing by pulling together stuff from all over and systematizing it. But here, all he does is codify the same thing you think. Here he says, Ketuv b'Torah lo yireh lo chachamim. Yechol in tamana tori tira to bad lo yim lo yeh oder. Right? So the Torah says lo yireh, I would think you could hide it. Or you could give it to Gentiles and not violate it. Now the question is, why is Gentiles, presumably taman is from yireh, and Gentiles is from lecha. The Catholic doesn't depend on sight, and seems to suggest that the key criterion is location as opposed to ownership. But a nice thing, presumably from the word batechem, that we require physically to be in your house, we require both ownership and location. Okay, since the first Leirelecha Hamed and Leirelecha, we have Leirelecha Torah, but Torah Hamed is interchangeable for the purposes of the Leirelecha here. Leirelecha Hamed, the Chol Gibulcha. So the Chol Gibulcha is intended to expand Batechem to mean all spaces. Okay, now the ambiguity here is going to be critical is, what does Rishuscha mean? Now he tells you that it comes to include the Choki Beto, the Sadeh Obi Iracheret. So does that mean other spaces that you own? Or anywhere? Okay. Yeah, right.
Anywhere meaning?
Anywhere
you have to be?
Anyway, you have to be. Anyway, the hobbies happen. Right, let's suppose I stored a bag of comedies in a hollow tree in Central Park.
Uh-huh. What do you own?
Well, I own it. What does he mean when he says the whole, or the whole Shuscha?
So the comedies that you own, whether it was anywhere, or whether it only
being
your
shoe,
and there's also comedies that you don't own.
In your house. Or your office. Well, the word Rishut is very great. Right? He uses the word Rishut here to go outside your house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the first line tells us, right, the first, right, B, right, B tells us that even if it doesn't, right, it's not even clear, because B seems to sound like if you don't mean that you gave it to the non-Jew. Right, so how do you get William of Sabotechem to mean, to me that it's very unclear.
So really looking at it as both how much I don't own within my possession and how much that I do own within a public place like the tree in Central Park. Are those the two categories that were...
Well, there's three categories. It's how much I don't own within my house, how much I sort of own, and that
was pledged to somebody else.
And if someone else owns, that is in my space.
Okay, the space means a broader definition than my...
The easy case is I own in my house. Right, okay. That's easy. Okay. Then there are two modifications. One is chametz I own that is not in my house. Okay. And the question is not in my house means not in my house, but somewhere else on my property. Or not in my house and in someone else's property.
Right.
Or in one's property. And then there's chametz, right, and then there's chametz that I don't really own.
That's in my possession.
All these variants of what it means to own stuff, what it means not to own, and which may or may not matter where it is or it is not, where it is not.
Okay.
Okay, and then there's chametz I don't own at all, which is in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's in your place. But you have no claim to in any way,
shape, or form.
It happens to be.
Right, but when you keep modifying, no shape or form, right? You know,
right.
By the same way, if we start, the sum of the starts is yours and stops, right? And starts moving away from you because you pledge with other people. There's stuff that belongs to other people and starts moving towards you because you start accepting responsibility for it.
Because there's no way, it's illogical that somebody else's coming could physically be in your house that you have in some claim on it of some sort, unless it's...
Well, plug in.
But so you sell the honey
yourself. Sorry, but well, it may become yours, because you get, it's ownerless, and ownerless stuff that flows into your yard is yours. Right, unless you, right. So, ownerless, it's more that it actually belongs to somebody else, right? Your non-Jewish worker comes in, holding it, right, holding his carnets on your, right, on your space. That's the easiest thing.
Someone comes in, you're also beating their
space. Yes. Right. And a plumber comes in, puts his lunchbox down.
Okay.
You know, which is fine to start with, but probably what happens is the plumber comes into the lunchbox and says, I'll be back in half an hour, guard that. All of a sudden, it becomes much more complicated.
And you're on the phone at the time.
Okay. So here we get, right? So you get to, right? So, Yechol Yehei, Hayab L'Va'er Ner Shuto, Chamed Shul Goya Shul Hakdish. Maybe you have to get rid of other people's comments. Tamadon Al-Yer L'Cha Shul Chayet Torev Al-Torev Shul Al-Chayem Shul Givoa. Right, now the Ram, right, so far the Ram is just quoting, basically, now he says, Palamadza, okay, this is his summary. Shekhamit shel Yisrael, in hi nichol birshuto, afilu tamun, afilu bi'ir acheret, afilu mufkad biyad goyim, hareze over lishim lo yir'eh lo yimatei. So that sounds like what he's saying is that, we're all trying to figure out, what does Rishut mean here? It can't mean, not just your house.
Mm-hmm.
But
you
need control. Tafil, right? Tafil, right? Here, yeah. Acheret, so we don't know. And Mufkad Gazgoyim, does that mean even it's in your Rishut because it belongs to you, even though it's in the Namja's house? Mm-hmm. Or it's in your Rishut because it's in your house, even though you're pledged as collateral?
So what does he think of all the book? What he is equating?
We don't know. Alright, so I'm going through it, showing you how the Rambam, right, yeah, as clarifications go, this has not been a tremendous success. Okay. The Chalei Shehu Hektesh, Oshel Goye Shehaya Yisrael Yisrael, Afilo Ya Imo Babayit, Tarezu Mutar Yisrael Shehin Yisrael. Right, that has a certain amount of clarity. Chalei really, really belongs to other people, even if it's in your house. Right, so we know that Bat Techem is not absolute. Right, but the Kham is modified by Lecha. Kham is belonging to other people, but really, really closely belongs to other people in your house is Mutter. The question is, what about Kham is that belongs to you that isn't quite in your house, or Kham is that doesn't quite belong to other people, that he hasn't settled? Okay, let me get some series of cases. All right, now let's try and bridge this gap. Relationship keeps Kham so likely. Sorry, I'm going to make one E. Now, Kham is a beer, Toshav, Shiyad, Yisrael, Shalakitolav. Even if it belongs to a Ger Tershav, whom a Jew has power over. So here you always have to be careful. The Ram always has... what's a Ger Tershav? The Ram always has two categories of Ger Tershav. At least we like to think that Ram has two categories of Ger Tershav. He has what they call a de jure Ger Tershav. A Ger Tershav under law is a non-Jew who accepts the Sheva Mitzvot because God commanded them to Moses at Sinai. And such a non-Jew is allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael according to the Rambam. And we have all these responsibilities, all the human responsibilities towards them. The problem is that Rambam says you can only accept the Ger Tershav during a time when the Yovel is Noeg. So we can't accept, right, so we haven't been able to accept the Ger Tershav for several thousand years. And that's, if you think that Gentiles are divided into pagan idolaters and Ger Tershav, so everyone, you never leave the category of Akum now because you can't see a Ger Tershav. So we tend to believe that Akum has a category called de facto Ger Tershav also. Which is somebody who sort of would be a Ger Tershav if we could take them. And then we try and push that a little bit further because Akum is really problematic when a Ger Tershav has to accept the authority, not just be a good person, but accept the authority of Halakha. So we say, well, you know, that's not maybe necessary for citizenship in a Halakhic polity, but most of the human implications of Ger Tershav apply anyway, even no matter what your rationale is, so long as you basically keep the Sheva Mitzvah. Right, then we have broader categories of, you know, what happens if you just basically keep the Sheva Mitzvah, you have certain exceptions to that. Whether those exceptions are blowing up certain groups of people, really generally prohibition against murder, or six out of seven really good on the ages can't give up the line, you know, even eating the flesh of a blind animal. I believe that lobster. Okay, wait, we'll leave that open. But the Hilaram says Gershav, so Yadi Shav, so there's a lot that maybe he's talking about the Yuri Gershav, right? So I mean, that's how he gets Yadi Shav, so that's a lot, right? That she's a tower over them. Because then Gershav, again, it's like a resident alien, right? You have to accept, right? You have to accept the competition as binding on you while you, right, while you live here. Ain't talking about the chametz reshut of the pesach. We also argue to remove the chametz from your reshut. And here reshut seems pretty clearly in space. Pesach. Okay, and then he tells Kozlov, instead we have to build a wall between your chametz and the chametz of the non-Jew left to come eat it. But for Hektish, you don't have to because it doesn't matter that because chametz were worried that if you're used to eating chametz, you'll come right. Chametz of non-Jew, you're worried that you'll eat it, but come into Hektish, you don't need Hektish from here either if you'll know to keep separate. Fine. That's why we skipped that one there because it's not conceptually significant. Okay. Gleshi Hitzki Santo, that's what Yisrael. If the Jew accepted Achrayus, which is defined as if it's lost or stolen, that you'll repay it. Hareza Chayim of Aro, Halil the Kibyal of Achrayus, not Sekishalo. Okay, so Aram tells you one of the things that moves things towards being yours is Kabbalah Achrayus. We located a lot of Achrayus, but if you haven't accepted Achrayus, even though it was a Pikadon, with you, Lucha Lekaino Espo, Lucha Lechon and Achra Pesach, Shed Yershut Agoyu. A Hebrew Shud clearly doesn't mean space, I don't think. Because Gleshi Yishki Kenta Yisrael sound like the non-Jewish. So you have the word Yershut meaning both space and not space. Now, you know, the previous line, the key line around was not that Kishalot. Because of ownership, and here he talks about space again. Okay, great. Anaf Shikis Kento Tishrol. This is another case of the Gemara that we skipped, which is what happens if the government quarters soldiers and keeps their food with you, right? So that right, enforced Achrayut, right? So that we say enforced Achrayut also, right, also makes it Kiyu Bishalo, even though you didn't willingly accept Achrayut, but you still have Achrayut for it. Okay, last paragraph. Yisrael, she hear him come to his faithful guy. Right, so you actually gave your chametz to non-Jew, right, to store his guayro. How that's different from Gresh Yitzki Chemso, don't know. In Amar Lo, you only make it up most, Mikana Yom Tloni, Kinei Chametz Yom Yachshav, Reza Bishuz Goy, Zolta Chametz Mutra Lachar Pesach, as the Gemara says, of course, that one has to be. See, it's not the time that, the time where the loan becomes declared, before the, declared in,
default.
Has to be before Pesach, otherwise there can't be an acquisition. Okay, that's the Rambam, and Clary doesn't converge in it.
What I find interesting is that by breaking it down all these different types of legal ownership,
yeah.
It really, to me, throws even more of a challenge of the whole idea of selling the chametz, because the idea of just selling chametz, I could buy it if you actually... If you didn't get it back in the same form, right? So I'm selling chametz, and you got back the dollar equivalent or something else, then you could say I really did sell it. But the fact that you're, this to me seems to really indicate that more than if you're selling it with a shtar, and you're getting back the same box of Cheerios that's in your basement before, then much is closer to a big one.
So this gets into a much broader question. I mean, the sale of chametz is an extreme measure already in the Gemara. If you're traveling on a boat, these are all the provisions you have. And so if you have to throw your provisions overboard, you starve. And so sell it to a non-Jew and buy it back after Pesach. And we all understand why that's necessary for profit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The extension, right, because if you a whiskey manufacturer and you need and your the most expensive whiskey needs in 30 years.
Right.
And so you have to destroy all your whiskey every spring, it doesn't work so well.
Right.
But as a broad question, right, this is what in competition law is called piercing the veil.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that often formalities are designed to prevent you from seeing what's actually happening. And then judges have a choice of whether it looks true or not.
Hmm.
We know perfectly well that when you engage in this sale, we know perfectly well that in real life, right, in real life, the non-Jew is not going to come get the chametz. The question is, do we think that there's enough of an interest to allow us to pull the veil of formality over what's actually happening and say, I don't see anything. Look at that, it's a curtain. That's legal fiction, so to speak, right? That's its own issue. Pointed out to us that the weaker the actual sale is, the tighter the contract is. Because you want to make sure that at least there's no, right, at least the formalities are perfect, right? You don't want it to be the slightest hole in the curtain. Where you can peek through. So the star from the stomach is like the ultra star. Right, every possible language and all that's run in. But I think that's I think that we have to recognize that that's what law does in many places. It fulfills over, and then you have to decide whether you think the interest is sufficient. But it's not dishonest.
Yeah, but just as just using this idea of a curtain, and the question is all of this just looking at making sure that a curtain is nice versus getting back to the actual e-car of Conan's coming for that?
Well, so you're assuming that the actual e-car is doesn't do, but maybe the actual e-car is, sometimes...
Yeah, a curtain.
Right. Let's give another analogy. I see Keep It Off of AIM, which is what I'm doing right now. So Keep It Off of AIM, primarily, according to the opening price, is defined as Machil Mashke, your parents. But how do you define Machil Mashkeh? There's a fundamental dispute, which is, does Machil Mashkeh mean you have to make sure your parents have enough food and drink, or does it mean you have to serve them? Mm-hmm. Now, if it means you have to serve them, does it mean you have to, do you have to believe what you're doing? Or is it, right, is the goal that we want you to inculcate certain feelings of subservience to your parents? Or is the goal that even if you don't feel that way,
make sure they
will. That's the substantive thing. Even if they make sure that the children still formally serve their parents, because it's really important to preserve in society the image of generational relationships, even if in this specific case it's inappropriate.
So this is back to what you were hinting at the first lecture. Then the idea here is that telling the comments, even if we look at it and saying it's a bit of a formality and it's not quote real, the exercise creates a relationship to us vis-a-vis the comments that we've sold it because we're no longer having access to whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of a gestalt of the relationship of us to comments as opposed to getting too bogged down in the terms of the star.
I think that you have to decide which of these there is. I think Alaka always recognizes the difference between the formal world. Alaka probably does, but Alaka maybe especially right now, difference between the real world and the legal world. And you have to decide which one you care about. For me, like the best illustration of this is Tefet Ribbit. So the problem is that there is no real difference between Ribbit and commerce.
Right.
Because all sale, all commerce is engaged in getting workers stuff and making profit, getting workers. Right. So how do you draw the line between an interest-bearing loan and commerce is almost impossible. Unless you want to limit it to really, right, because if you just stick to the right, so there's so many ways around it, so many ways to avoid reverse derisa, usually by buying tricks to declare non-interest. So we created a category of reverse derisa, or apocryphus. But the problem is that there is no conceptual way to separate it. So I tend to think, the radical notion that basically what they did was they put up all the possible ways out, and they threw dark for us, and every fourth mechanism was prohibited. Because that was a way of maintaining the value without shutting down
the value of the prohibition.
The value of the prohibition without shutting down the system.
Yeah.
And if you try and actually come up with a conceptual scheme as to what is prohibited derivatives and what is forbidden derivatives, I don't think you can.
Okay.
I think it's just the useless endeavor.
Okay.
That was the wrong one. We should see what the wrong one was in advance. Let's go back to the figure.
Okay.
So here's the figure, right? Page one. So there are three separate, textual collectives, so to speak. Right? The first one, which exists on its own and doesn't have any formal role in the conversation, but nonetheless seems to be what it's matter to me, is Shnei Dvarim She'enam B'Shutan Shel Adam B'Tana Katuv Kilu B'Shuto Ve'Elohein Or B'Shut Rabim B'Tanei B'Sheisha B'Malach. Anyway, so the things that aren't in your possession, but the sort of treatment that they were, and one of them is coming from the time that it becomes prohibited. Okay, it's not in your rishus, but we should it if it's in your rishus. Okay, then we have all the figures, we have the brightness that we focused on in the second week, so I want to go through and point out the themes in again. Okay, so first we started Shiratim in Sorali Matidavatikam. What's the purpose of that? The Rishad Lirelachas are the called Bucha. And that would be fine, except then we have a line thrown in the middle, which is Lafish and Amr Lirelachas. Or that doesn't follow at all. And the form is off, right? Why do you have a location? When you get to answer the question, we answer the question of what does Lo Yerelecha mean. Okay, so it's a bit of a problem as to what the transition is between the first two lines.
No, I'm sorry, can you
follow
that?
What do we mean by Lo Yerelecha?
You shouldn't see it, and it shouldn't be yours, so hide it.
Right, so why don't we have a line, Shalcha Yetareb, Atarev, Shalachar, and Shal Gavoa? Right, if the question is, why does it say Lo Yimasev, it already says Lo Yimasev, so it means to turn the Lucha. If the question is about the Shem as opposed to Gvulcha, so that line, Shalcha Yetareb, Atarev, Shalachar, it follows nicely from Lo Yimasev to Or. So it doesn't seem to follow nicely from the question, why do I need to blame a tip of the hand? What does it say to the Torah? Okay, then we go on to the next problem, which we saw with Nafnish Loki Dashto, which the Amorim point out, as I told right, seems to be backwards. Right, because the only people that I'm not allowed to accept from a non-Jew is a non-Jew whom I have no relationship with. How do I know that I am not allowed to accept a tikkun from a non-Jew I have a real relationship with? It should be backwards. It should be vice versa. Right? The less learned a non-Jew is, the more it should be permitted to accept it. So he pointed out that I have two ways of resolving this. One way is to flip the line and flip non-Jews A to non-Jew B, and the other is to move the line up and say that it's right, that's rather line that really is going on the hechter shulchayet torev ataro shulacherim. It now gives us two anomalies about that line, Shalchayet Tarev, about the Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't belong where it is, and it does belong a line more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we get to Ein Le'Yoshev V'Tesem Dvorot V'Shikim Arav Minayim. Now, the whole issue is, where does this come from? What do we care about wells and cisterns and caves? Right, what are those examples? Are those the only things we can think about as houses?
Mm-hmm.
What about fuels?
Well, not protected
fields, but I'm not a protected
place.
Still not a protected space. Okay. Could be.
Well, it's hidden, though.
Or it could be
there are places
which are hidden, right?
Out of sight.
Out of sight, right? It could be these are variants of someone. Right? Tough to know, right? Just strange examples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in the end, we end up saying, just making an absolute declaration, and guess what? There is no difference between Batesim and Gold. In the end, there is no difference between your house and anywhere else. We make it zero shadow. Okay, which means our opening point when I started to address Al-Fai is we have three differences between the Sukkim. Right? One says, you must say no l'cha and b'sechem. The other says, yire'e l'cha and g'vulcha.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now we've eliminated the difference between g'vulcha and b'sechem.
Sure.
So we have to ask ourselves, so what's the purpose of b'sechem? Which, ironically, is the question that we thought this would be open to.
We'll clarify it. Well, the Sukkim are there your personal property, right?
We don't know.
Okay. It gets back to the faculty of your office.
Absolutely right.
In the university, you don't own the office, but
you treat it
as if you do.
Right. So we don't know. We don't know what Vulcha expands to. All we know is there's no difference between Vulcha and Batehem. And that, of course, raises the question of what is the purpose of Batehem. And the problem with that is that was we thought, the opening question. And Rashi said it was the opening question, right? So what are we going to say about Batehem, not Talmud Lahar? Right, so I argue in the past, the Pesachim, that it must be that they're understanding Batehem as modifying Yimatzei, and saying one phrase, Yimatzei, Batehem, as opposed to claiming that Batehem is a geographic space. That's the only way to read the sugya, if you read it the way we have it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we have this break at the end, which says, non-Jew who's nisnas to chaserish Yisrael ends up as lover, he uses pikadon yachti lover, yitabel bayit, mystery term, ends up as lover. Alright, and then we have the question, what shenema lo yimatseh means. It seems to imply that lo yimatseh, well, what? Is that the final answer to lo yimatseh devatichem, if you're yitabel bayit? But it, right, that has to be about this him and not someone else's house, but with all the other places which are not your house. So we're like, not well, sure, the Gemara is not even sure. Because the Gemara says, how does the Lehman say, teach you stable life, right? And I said, my father's got something about you, and maybe the Lehman say goes up online, and maybe the say goes down. So, okay, so our themes are, the putting Shalchaiya started way up the line early, the non-Jew being backwards, the failure to respond to the ultimate question of what they've been, and the not understanding what the Midrash Halakha is in what, at the very end of the Brisa, or what Yechezel Bayit means. Okay, then I pointed out that we have two places in the Sugya where the Gemara seems to, the sound of the Gemara seems to be putting it on Midrash Halakha, that just to resolve it spontaneously, it comes up with new Midrash Halakha. One is, it says, what you must say is there to tell me that we can, that we can tell you that even though ordinarily, Achrayut does not make something yours, what you must say comes to teach me that Achrayut makes something yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first Mishalach that comes in, that you must say modifies ownership. And the second is a new wild case, right, which says, Misha matzui b'yadcha, yasasesh inu matzui b'yadcha. Right, which the Gemara uses to say that if you rent space in your house to someone else, all of a sudden you're not chayav for chametz, even though it's still your house, so it still is batneichem, because the new drasha you must say, told you must say the batneichem, so even if it's in your house, and it's in your house, and it's there, but it's not matzui b'yadcha. Okay. New idea entirely, which the Psalm seems to just throw in to resolve this issue of Yechezel Bayit.
That's interesting, because that can mean, if you rent a house out, there are certain types of means that a landlord has that you would have actually perhaps some actual more rights than your tenants, non-Jewish tenants, coming than you would in the other legal fictions that create.
Sure. Okay, and then we have the whole issue of the non-Jew who, we put in the factors of whose house is the collateral in, and did he say, immediately where we pointed out that these three paisos, basically what we do is distribute the third paiso over the first two. Okay, good. So now we're done. Turn to page 2. I've taken these to give it, and I have just happily given them letters, and so you can see every unit has a letter. I suggest that you tell us at page 2. That's what the site is. Well, here I'm risking. Now I've given you them.
What's going to happen underneath the two other sheets?
What I then gave you is the parallel the parallel sources for this figure. Okay, let's see what happens in the parallel sources. So the first is the Mechotah of the Rav Ishmael. Okay, see, there are two Mechotahs, one, Mechotah is the Midrash Halakha and Shmos. I just mean the same thing as the Mechotah, right? That is, right, we just have conventional terms. The Mechotah is the Midrash Halakha and Shmos. It exists in two versions, which we call Rav Ishmael and Shem Bayachai. She says, most of the time, the world of scholarship believes that there are two schools of Midrash Halakha, one belonging to Rishmael, one belonging to Rishon Bayachai, or really Rabbi Akiva, and that you can distinguish which is which. The rest of the time, the scholar world is somewhat more cautious than I think correct, and says, the truth is we have no idea. The only clue we have is that the Gemara says that there's a difference between the school of Rabbi Akiva that learns Ribli, and the school of Rabbi Ishmael that learns Paul and Father Paul. That we know. But I don't think anyone knows the difference between them. And whatever difference anyone has come up between them is not consistent across the Midrash Halakha. So I tend to be much more agnostic about this. Abraham Joshua Heschel builds this whole massive work, so much find us authority has it on that assumption, and he's going to find theological differences between between the magician, which has now been socially identified, and the whole universe is getting built off this. I am not even to start. Okay. But it does exist. The Hilchot is one of the we have whole in the Hilchot of Mishnah Mordechai. We have basically a reconstructed fragment of some other work. Okay. So the Hilchot is developed a Chaim and Amar. Okay, same opening line as we have in our Brisa. But he gets the Fish and Amar Bechol Bukhash, and then I need Rashma. Why do I need Devote Hashem? Not because Devote Hashem contradicts the Yerelachas or Rosh Lachayim or the Rosh Lachayim, but because it contradicts the end of the Pasuk, the Yerelachas or the Chol Zvulcha. So I might think the Chol Zvulcha teaches me anywhere, period, not just in your houses. Tam the Lomber Devote Hashem. Ma Bate Hashem Dir Shuzchem, Aski Vulcha Dir Shuzcha. So Bate Hashem comes to limit Gvul, and it comes to limit Gvul to a category called Rishud. Now, what does the category called Rishud mean? No, to say, yes, the Chemtos of Yisrael, Shehud Rishud Nafri, this excludes the Chemtos belonging to a Jew that is in the Rishud of a non-Jew. Afal Tishi Echol Lada'aro, even though the Jew has the authority to destroy it, Al Einam Rishuto. Yes, the Chemtos of Nafri, Shehud Rishud Yisrael, this combination of Nafal of Mapolet, Afal Tishi Rishuto, Al Einam Echol Lada'aro. So the Chilta sets up two entirely different criteria. Right? Ownership is not among them. Right? The Chilta has two criteria. One criteria is space, and the other criteria that which is what it seems to
space means the Rishud in possession room?
Physical space.
Mm-hmm.
It is in your physical space.
Okay.
And the other is authority to burn.
Mm-hmm.
Shared and Hamaytan
and
companies would not be included in that. Yeah. The Chor, so far as you can tell, is only two things, only two criteria.
And the commitment in the Chor of the Road, is that used as a flag to say that you've got certain rights and that you're allowed to destroy it? I mean,
we already know that, is the right to destroy it.
Right. I mean, the implication is that you have to have certain rights in this property that's in your possession if you would be having the actual rights to destroy it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the only right you have is the right to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell you the right to destroy it without... You know, you might see that this even includes the right to destroy it without obligation to repay.
Right.
But it's an interesting way of distilling all the
right
areas.
Right.
And when it comes down to it, you can't, you know, basically do what you want with it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that the right to use it isn't relevant. All that matters is the right. There's an incentive to destroy it, right? So if you can destroy it, then it's not there. If you can't destroy it, then it's not there. No matter what else you can do with it or not do with it.
Uh-huh.
And this is like a simple binary system.
Do you have the right
space,
to destroy it?
Space. Even if you have a right to destroy it, it's not in your space, so what? Right? And even if that space not defined as location, but defined as owner, right, space you own. And on the other hand, right, and the other thing is you have to have the right to destroy it, or be able to destroy it, because if it's underneath the pit, right, there's no issue either.
So you need both. You need
right.
Your shoe space and your power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you call it and the legal permission.
Yes. So you need both to call it. You need both. You need legal and physical capacity to burn, and right, and your space.
Physical space.
Okay. Totally different universe.
Right.
Yeah. Totally different universe.
Is that it? No discussion about the other stuff.
Nope.
I like it. I think
that's it. That's it.
We're done.
Okay. The Chosei of Shin Bar Yochai is much more extensive. It's only the Tzeva of Dechem. Right, these both start the same way as our Brisa does, though, right? Starts with the Pasuk, only the Tzeva of Dechem. Now, it says, Mifal Shem Le'erlecha, Yechol Yechmanas, I have to be careful because this is the editor claiming this belongs here, but I'm going to take the editor's assertions for now. Yechol Yechim Yechatel Tikadon, Tal Lomar Torali Vatev Vatechem. So he thinks it's the same as our Brisa, just taking out the annoying Shulchai Yechara Shem Aferim. Right? Right, we just push that back one line. Now we push that back 100. What happened? Local with the custom of the Deutsche Loki Basto. Interesting assertion, the scars of Beitecha. The Shoyim Khab Hatser shall come in. So now that line, in fact, like Rabba, the line to relate directly to Lachayat HaRelat HaRosh HaLachayr. And the Chulah just solved both structural problems by pushing that line down one. And I push Lachayat HaRelat down one line. Okay, and then we get to HaRosh HaLachayr and we're happy. But then, this throws in a Rabashim Ben Gamliel in there, right before the new line. It starts over. Hello, this is all by your Rebbe, you must say, hey, not Tom was all by your say. New question, right? Not Atechem and Vulcha, right, but you must say Nireh. To which the answer is no. Etcha matzui lecha as bakutavaro, etcha eina matzui lecha as eina as bakutavaro, mikant omer chamesh nafal av mapol toshmo tol tochabor, etc. Okay, so he has, right, so Rishon Ben Gamliel introduces a new drasha of matzui lecha and not matzui lecha. Okay, and then the Nechotis, then we get the line, okay? Nachrish and Bala Vesosha Yitzhar Lachamitz Gerdel in the Kuklo, Yitzhar Lachayel Levaro, Shememar Lirei Lachaf to Or. Yitzhar Lachayel Levaro, Yitzhar Lachayel Levaro, and the Kuklo. So what the Nechotis does, it solves our first two structural problems, from happily, by moving Shachayel and Torah down the line. It solves the underlying structural problem. How do we answer the question about Tatham? Saying there's two different questions. There's Bateshem, which we answer up front, and then there's Yimatei Red, which we answer separately at the bottom. And we're assuming on the old statement. I don't confuse those two issues. And it solves the problem of which line does Yimatei relate to in L and N at the end of that section by saying, you know what? L is from Lair the Chas Or. Who needs Yimatei here? You just played the wrong topic. Okay. Then we get to Yerushalmi. Now again, Yerushalmi, I'm just taking the manuscript that's published. I can't tell you anything about what the risk. You know, Yerushalmi is always a mess. There's always a risk whenever you close the Yerushalmi. This is the Yerushalmi as we have it. Okay, I can't tell you more than that because while we do it happily now have a CD, which has all the Bobby manuscripts on it, no one's typed in the Yerushalmi manuscript yet. So just nobody's doing it. Sort of going to the library and looking at everyone, and I haven't been able to do that. Okay, Layarlacha, the Hithi Omera, his key is Bol Yehim Mutter, and Lord Nolin is Hithi Matekan. Okay, so that Lachorah means you can't accept the Lord Nolin is Hithi comes to tell me you can't teach to take a non-Jewish on it. Yehim Mutter, Hithi Matekan, and Hithi Omera, Yehim Mutter, Yehim and Lord Nolin is Hithi Okay, so the Kid is Lachor, Yehim Mutter, now we have a new solution to LMN, which is that LMN comes out of the relationship along with cooking. From Leir Elocha, Leir Elocha teaches me that a Pikadel and teaching me Pikadel is Mutter, no, you must say, but the Fem teaches me a Pikadel is Osir. But then I would have thought, oh, that means even Yechel Abayit, Leir Elocha somehow teaches me, no, it has to be right, Yechel Abayit makes it Mutter. And we sort of compromise, but it's only Osir, it is in your house. And it's really specific. It doesn't have to be yours, and it doesn't really have to be your house. But it has to be enough. It has to have enough combinations of yours and your house to be right to be out there. Because if it's yours and it's in his house, it's still out there. And if it's his and it's in your house, it's still out there. But if it's his, but he's given it to become known to you, and it's not really your house, then it becomes Mutter.
I mean, if he pledges chametz, but you're keeping it in the bank.
Right, then that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Or the stock issue.
Right.
Right.
Does it steal it all, or is it just yours and it's not in your house?
Doesn't say, that doesn't come up here, but presumably I'm assuming that's true. Okay. So yeah, what I wanted to say
is, but just to clarify, house can mean anything that you can walk into any property you own, that's your house.
We don't know, because we don't have the rest of the dress. We don't have the rest of the shalot.
It could be your factory, for all we know.
Or your pit.
Did you get, like, a gift certificate to buy a scratch? So you definitely I can convert it to scotch anything you want, but it's not actually scotch.
Don't get rid of the coffee pot.
Okay. So I wanted to point out, just one thing just to point out is, we went over the figure originally, so we looked at line 2 and we said, well, that's wild that the Stam came up with a Sobi Nid Rasha, Eshematui Gekha, right? It's weird, right? Where did you get this idea that, you know, that if you rent someone's house, right, if you rent someone your house, it's not a violation of Yimasei B'Vat Echem, because Yimasei means Matui Gekha. Where did that come from?
Right.
The answer is, it came from the Mitzvot of Rabbi Shem Bar Yochai. I'm very strong about this. When it looks like an honest section of the Talmud are making stuff up, almost never true. Right? People think it's and it's here, it's clear, right? You could never have independently come up with that line, you shouldn't necessarily be a fast. Right? You know, it looks like it's a spontaneous midrash halakha. Not possible. Obviously, they're just quoting the Mishnah Torah in Bar Yochai.
Where did that come from?
That you can say the Mishnah Torah, right? It goes back 10-8 times in Yochai. Right? But there's nothing creative about the Stam terminologically here. It's not coming up with a midrash halakha. Right? It's just pulling together old materials without quoting them. And I would argue that's very, very often the case, that people generally misunderstand the honest sections of the Talmud as being creative, and like when over and over again, if they're not. They're just recording stuff that was oral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but that went wrong. Okay, so we go back. Let's take a look at what the Rambam begins.
No tearing, right?
Well, yeah, you have three pages in front of you there. Although, you know what it is, let's go to page 5 first. So I did page 5, but this is the interesting thing. I just put together a theoretical original Midrash Halakha for you.
Theoretical?
I have never seen
it. Theoretical.
Here we go. Right?
Take a look.
All you have to do to create a Midrash Halakha that solves all the problems is to take out Shokai Yatara Shalahara. I'm going to use that. I move it down. That's around page 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all we do is solve the initial structural problems the way it was solved in the Mishnah of Rabbi Ishmael. So we're comparing 5 and 3 now. Right? So the way we solve the original problem is we say that Shokai Yatar Batal Rosh HaLacharim goes down one line, and we put it, and it's the consequence of the reverse question, now that I know that I can't hide it. Right, what's the purpose of lawyer? And the answer is to teach me, right, lawyer of thought, and that's just to teach me I can see other people's eyes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, all I do at the bottom is, right, so that solves the problem of reversing the trees also, right, we pointed out, it solves it like rubber. And then we say, in the yellow, which is about to attend, the Baruch, the Shishim, Arab, the Nayan, Tamlam, the Kod, Bukha. Now we just have to ask the reverse question. Right? So now that we know this B'chol Bukha, and we know that there's going to be no difference between Gevul and Bayit, what do I need Batei Chen for? So that, we solve the way the B'chol Rav Yishmael did. Ma Batei Chen B'chol Chen, Af Bukha B'chol Chen. Okay, so this is an integrated Midrash Halakha. You can take one piece out of the B'chol Rav Yishmael, one piece out of the B'chol Rav Yishmael, you plug them into our Gemara, all of a sudden, everything makes sense.
Does it mean that sometimes it existed in some form?
Well, so now, the first part is just ruling like Rava as to how to solve the problem with non-Jew.
Mm.
Right?
That's not right.
No. And the second part is just saying that there has to be a solution to the question, when do we answer the question, so we must say, well, let's take them.
I just need Joseph.
And the answer to that, the answer to that probably was just suggested that it has to rely, has to end in the, has to be in the Brisa of Yishei Lovayit. Right, the answer to the question, but they kind of have to be in the Brisa of Yishei Lovayit, which we resolve the family Matzei. Right, that's M.
Mm-hmm.
right? And that has to be, and right, and it has to be, there's some kind of category of something which is your house, but not quite your house. Okay. Now, the question is, what did the Rambam do? So, what I'm interested in doing and wondering is whether this, 5 and 4, okay, whether 5 and 4 are actually doing the same thing. That is what the Rambam is what the Rambam is doing.
It's almost about half the time.
What the Rambam is doing is interpreting the Gemara in light of the other sources. I have one big clue.
Okay.
I have one big
clue.
What I want to claim is that whereas Rashi reads the Gemara as we have it, it's at least possible that what the Rambam does, the Rambam isn't a parsha, he's not interested in explaining the Gemara the way we have it. What he's interested in is understanding the Midrash Halakha and how he gets the Halakha. Yeah. And the way he does that is he has all the Midrash Halakha in front of him,
right,
and he tries to understand what the Midrash Halakha was and what the outcome is.
Right.
Consistent with all the Halakha in the Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the equal footing,
and he at least is willing to try, he's willing to, at least in terms of what the Midrash Halakha is, he's willing to be open. He's not taking the Gemara as a self-sufficient text. This is pure speculation. What I have in the Rambam, the big clue, is that the word Birshutcha shows up all over the Rambam. And particularly says, Talmud Lomar, he has H. Talmud Lomar, Bechol Zulcha, Bechol Rishutcha. Now, where did he get that idea from?
Mm-hmm.
All we have in the Gemara is the Zorah Shichin and Minayin, Shichin and Arlis. Not only that, the Rambam expands the cases in the Gemara of Zorah Shichin and Arlis, and the Rambam says, I feel the Yerach Eretz. And just like that. So the key thing we understand in the Rambam is the Rambam has a radical reinterpretation of that line of the Bais in our Gemara. He doesn't take it as meaning a specific category of cases of Baruch Yishim Arav. He goes out of his way to tell you it means even Bihir Acheret, which is about as far from the Pashut Shot of the Brisa as you can get. So my suggestion is that the Rambam has to have been reading it. Now, Rambam also talks like Rava in terms of how he presents the Brisa to Goy.
Right. He's thinking about his office and how he...
In both places, he passed my girls against the body, but this is an exegetical dispute and not a halakhic dispute, so it shouldn't be that way. But it happens, he talks to him like, girls against the body, the way the Gemara should be set up. And he uses the word Rishut and creates whole new universes in order to explain all the data.
Mm-hmm.
With a drasha that appears to be in the Chuppah, that appears to be in the Chuppah of Yishmael. Now he begins the Gemara, and he begins the explanation with line C, which is the way the Yerushalmi starts it. He doesn't begin with Torah Lima Sevi Vatechem, he begins with Layer Lecha Yechol Yishkinas Layer Mutar. Okay, so that's my my overall suggestion is that what you have in the Rambam, is an attempt to construct the halakha. As of now, halakha is exactly the same. Every single halakhic statement in the Gemara is in the Rambam,
mm-hmm.
Right, except he has to make choices. But the framework, the Midrash Halakha framework, is now he never contradicts anything the Bavli says, but it's dramatically informed. Right, by not just the content, but by the form of the other Midrashim, and essentially what he does is he reconstructs the Midrash Halakha out of the other sources. Now, what emerges from that, now again, I can have fun at the Briscoe, emerges from that, though, is that we saw that the Midrash Halakha has a very different conceptual scheme than is explicit in the Gemara. So the Gemara's conceptual scheme is very hard to follow. The Gemara's conceptual scheme has no axis but ownership, and yet has all sorts of data which is incompatible with ownership. The Rambam puts in the category Rishut,
mm-hmm.
And the category Rishut, Misa actually divides, and he uses it in both senses. that I divide into, right, divide into categories that have nothing to do with ownership, right, that divide into space and control.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to suggest that you can actually construct the Rambam in such a way that you'll see what the Rambam actually is doing is explaining by Rabbi Masay with almost no reference to ownership. Right, but instead, right, but he uses the line Shachayat to Rebbe to write Shavacherim. But when he translates, right, the line B, right, the key line, which is both ownership line, which is that everything depends on the Bavli.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the Rambam, right, and all of a sudden he translates it into Rishis. Okay, so that's right. So that's the right. The overall contention is that ownership is not a sufficient axis.
Right.
It's not a sufficient axis conceptually. It's not a sufficient axis textually.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't explain why there's a topic why you must say it's not taken. Right. So the truth. Right. So the truth is to have to somehow either emerge from a synthesis between the early chachamim and the early mitzvahim that they found where you claim by ownership, or you have to claim that there are two different axes. One is the Lukha axis, which is modified by the fact that Lukha can't be absolute, and one of them is the Tehan axis, which is modified by the fact that they have the whole Lukha.
Mm-hmm.
The Gemara largely seems to be trying to meld them into a single synthetic axis, and the Rambam is not trying to. The Rambam is willing to concede that they are two separate axes, although textually each of them modifies the other, and the reason for that is that the Rambam is not just reading the Gemara, the Rambam is reading all the Midrashim collectively. That's the,
Did he find flaw in the Bavli that forced him to look elsewhere, or did I just kind of sleep
that? I am much, much more tentative about Rambam than Rashi because I have rarely done Rambam systematically in that fashion. I have people teaching me this what Rambam does, this is really pretty much the first time I've done it.
In a profoundly
systematic fashion. My bet is that the Rambam always read everything. So he only wrote a Perush on Yerushalmi, for example. It's a terrible loss because it's the only Perush on Yerushalmi from Yerushalmi. And we don't have it. Right? We might have tremendously more insight into Yerushalmi if we had the Rambam's Perush. So my bet is that the Rambam read it always, and that his right, and that his you know, that he never that all his anything he does is based on everything. But I can't prove that. It just seems to be the language of the smoking gun.
Now how unique is the Rambam in this approach?
That's also a good question. You know, a lot of people like to claim that Rambam is just the standard Sephardi. In this regard, that was the way you learned in Sfarad. That's a claim that they probably had access to more in Sfarad than we have, in Ashkenazi. That's probably, we know, for example, that the Rambam had a full Yerushalmi. He's a remarkably rare figure. The Baal Yad Tov didn't have Yerushalmi.
Mm-hmm.
They had some kind of excerpted Yerushalmi. And they didn't really distinguish in Yerushalmi and Yerushalim. Like when you say Yerushalmi and Tov, it can mean anything that's not properly. It doesn't have to mean what we call the Talmud Yerushalmi. So, I suspect that, that at least for a period of time, it's pure speculation. I'm not a historian. I think I'm useful at is, right, it's structural analysis, and looking for linguistic echoes. I think that's suggestive in this case. I don't want to make dramatic claims beyond that.
The Rambam starts out in this, Euclidean, right?
Yeah.
He starts with, we'll go into Sukkim. Is that normal for Rambam? You normally start out with just telling us the deal is?
Right, so he said, he sees you have your shop of Italian.
I don't think it's so unusual,
okay.
but I am not a Rambam expert at all. Yes. The interesting thing to me here is watching the relationship between Rambam and the Gemara. I don't really,
immediately saying he must have found real problems with the Gemara that he felt the need to go through it. Because you might either have, coming into this, you might have a knowledge of the Gemara and say, why is that not working here? Or, he felt compelled to actually go through the Gemara.
Maybe. I think Ram always quotes, he always quotes Sukkim. He always quotes Sukkim. And you look at, you know, what the there are three citations of Sukkim here, that's all. Right. What the Rambam does, you know, I was going to do that, but I didn't have time, but I just show you how different he is from Rashi, right, is that he makes no effort to explain, to Hazra, he makes no effort to go in order to Gemara, to help you understand the Gemara. What he does is he just breaks out all the Gemara's interpretations, right, as separate units, and he doesn't really try to connect them back into the Gemara. Right, so I think that this is probably not atypical to present what you get out of the Sukkim and then present halachic development without trying to connect it back to the Sukkim. I would think that would not be atypical, but again, you know, I've never done Rambam in a way that makes me happy systematically. I can do it as a Brisker. I can do some of the academics, but I've never. You know, what it would take is for at least a year giving a shiur which was Gemara Rambam. And if I did that, if I could do this, right, for a year, at the end of that, I think I would know something. And right now, I've never done it. So it's just this figure which has bothered me now for 7-8 years. And I'm happy, like, I think I understand what happened.
Very convincing.
What happened in this figure.
For this little one. And it also seems like it fits that, you know, Rambam and Rashi both, to some extent, following kind of the initial things that, you know, Rashi wants to make sure that we understand the debate in the Gemara, but that we understand it exactly the way he's going to tell us, and we're not going to need any other commentary. And Rambam wants to make sure that we understand halacha.
Exactly right.
He's done this work for us, so we can read it and be sure. So he might or might not have had the full universe of what he could have had in the resources, right. But whatever he had, this is very convincing that that's what he was doing.
I hope so.
Maybe it wasn't 12, but what's in the world of biology, you're supers and slaves.
Yeah,
so to speak. And I'm wondering if, you know, that's just coming out through the, you know, code that's just coming down, writing things that they want to split things down and make more categories and more distinctions. Mm-hmm. You know, to say, no, you want to, you know, simplify and break down these artificial distinctions and maybe find a more, you know, clear conceptualization.
Right. I know that
Rambam's more of a grouper and that in some of these other.
Maybe, yeah, that's
a little far.
Too broad for me. I just don't know enough, you know,
okay.
I try to limit myself to what I think I can demonstrate, or, you know, at least, you know, so, you know, I had like three or four famous conjectures at the end, that's fine. But I don't have a conjecture about that one.